action. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken on for another 30 minutes of a discussion of everybody's favorite drama, The Fugitive. Tonight, if you want to be on the program, you can't, because the program you're listening to is actually recorded about a week and a half earlier. But the discussion will be just as intensive as it usually is. And if you have any comments you would like to email, you can do so by sending them to fugitive@ksav.org. All right, for the next two programs, tonight and June the 26th, we'll be discussing the episode The End is But the Beginning. Tonight's will be parts 1 and 2, or acts 1 and 2. And to start it off, Ken had his 15 minutes of fame in the last program, so that's it. That's got to hold him for a while.
Can't even talk to him now. He thinks he's a big shot.
We're gonna go back to the old master himself, with the emphasis on the old.
Here's
Bobby Neer.
Thank you. I feel great about that.
Yeah.
As you stated, we are here to discuss an episode about halfway through season two called The End is But the Beginning. And at this point in the series, I think that viewers can probably be forgiven if they've grown just a little bit weary of the number of beautiful women who come across Richard Kimball's path and throw themselves at his feet. They're immediately attracted to him, and many of them almost beg him to take them along, because obviously the life of a fugitive on the road with nowhere to live and no food to eat and being pursued by a maniac police officer is something all women aspire to. And after you've seen this for like the first 45 or so episodes, you begin to think this is just getting ridiculous. So now we're at this episode, and what we find is a new potential Kimball love interest who looks and acts and talks and is so different than everybody else that came before her that you can't but help but notice her. Her name is Amy, and when this episode begins, she is working in an office, and she's peeking out the window at Richard Kimball, who is apparently driving a truck for this company, and he's working on the truck. She's looking at him with a great deal of interest. This is nothing new. Many women do, and they will again in the series, so that's not unusual. But what is unusual is what comes next. Amy goes over to a desk and takes out a couple of tickets to some sort of event. She goes outside and she offers the tickets to Richard Kimball. She tells him that she has these tickets to a play that she was going to go to with someone else, and that for some reason, that she does not state why, they cannot go, and she'd like to know if he would like to have the tickets instead. Obviously, this is just a come-on. This is a way to introduce herself or to get him interested in her without a direct confrontation, which other women have always done. And it's quite interesting to see this. We really have not seen this before. She seems quite surprised when he says yes, but even more surprised than Amy, we're surprised, because Kimball actually agrees to go out on a date. Not only does he agree to accept the tickets, he actually suggests that maybe they can turn it into a dinner date. Well, when do we ever see that? I mean, he's had gorgeous women throw themselves at him, and he doesn't even look interested. He doesn't want to do anything. He's got other things on his mind. Now, all of a sudden, well, maybe a little recreation isn't a bad idea. This is quite amazing. I believe that this particular character, Amy, played really well by actress Barbara Barry in a great, subdued, low-key performance that's just right for this character. I think that she becomes one of our favorites immediately. It takes no time at all. Just like we loved Karen from the beginning, so we love her from the beginning. And this opening scene, I think, really says a lot about her. We'll find out later on that she's not only low-key like this, she's also very smart, and this makes her look different than everybody else. In my review, I mentioned that when she goes outside to offer Kimball these tickets and it turns into a potential date, on her way back into the office, she kind of has a little skip in her step. You can see it just as she reaches the front door. She swirls her skirt around a little bit, and she looks like She looks like a high school girl who just got a date with the captain of the football team. Amy is quite different than everybody else. She not only acts different, but she looks different. She's not the glamorous type like Karen in Never Wave Goodbye with her blonde hair and her high cheekbones and her beautiful face. She's certainly not like Ellie in World's End with Suzanne Plachette's black hair piled up on top of her head. Amy is attractive in her own way, but she is somewhat on the plain side. And that, I think, is actually very appealing. It might not have been, except for all those girlfriends that came before her, but I think that right away we sense something is going on here. Do you agree, Kitty?
Yeah, actually I do. And you look at Barbara Barry, and, you know, I think she's very cute. You know, but obviously she's not somebody that you would, she's probably not the first choice that somebody would want to do some type of modeling shoot, you know, of glamorous dresses or something like that. But what does strike me about her as I'm thinking about her, and I think back to Diane Brewster, and I think Diane Brewster isn't necessarily that glamorous either. And I sometimes wonder when I think about this episode if maybe they were trying to bring, you know, they were trying to cast somebody who maybe kind of reminded him a little bit of Helen, you know, because Helen never struck me as, you know, Diane Brewster never struck me as that glamorous in the very brief times that we have seen her in that episode, Girl from Little Egypt. But yeah, I liked it. I liked it how she came out, and it's as though she wasn't expecting him to ask her out, because she said, well, you go ahead and take the tickets. And he said, well, I'll take them, but, you know, how about you come with me? And she said, oh, well, I'd be happy to come with you. And then he said, oh, and let's turn it into dinner. We'll have dinner beforehand. And, you know, I was actually kind of disappointed. I would have liked to have seen what was going to happen on the dinner date.
Well, Ken said that in his review. He would have liked to have seen them go through with it, actually.
Yeah, so it's a shame that this unfortunate accident had to occur. So, Ken, what do you think of it?
Oh, you guys know what I think. Karen is my favorite character in the entire series. You know that. But did you guys know that Amy is my second favorite character out of 120 episodes?
Yes, I certainly do.
And it's really odd. I don't know what it is about her, but you watch the opening scene, that act one, it's really kind of touching. You see Kimball, he's kind of a handyman, he's got his truck, he's out there kind of working. He's a fugitive on the run, yet he needs this low-key job. You've got Amy in the office working for her boss, and she's peeking out the window at him. But she doesn't act like the other dysfunctional woman we've seen.
Well, because she's not dysfunctional.
Right. She is, she's genuine, and you know exactly where she's coming from. And, you know, that was a crafty way for her to ask Kimball out on a date instead of just going up to him and saying, hey, you want to go to dinner tonight? That's too forward. She takes the tickets and presents to Kimball. But then, you're right, Bob, when Kimball responded and said, well, go with me, let's go to the theater together, I was shocked.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a very interesting scene, and then I say, oh, well, let's see what happens on the date, you know. You kind of, at first glance, you don't think these two are a match, but actually, maybe they could have been.
Well, I don't know if you remember or not, but on the message board, when we reviewed this episode, I guess a couple of years ago now, back in season two, there was a lot of talk on there, some of it from me and a lot of it from all of us, about how more than anybody else, if you're projecting into the future, if you assume that Kimball's going to one day be found innocent, he's going to resume his life as a doctor, she looks more than anybody like she could be a doctor's wife, does she not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree about Helen. I mean, we see her as a doctor's wife, but of course she's always got a drink in her hand, so it's hard to say anything about that. And I can see Karen being a doctor's wife, I think. I don't know that I can see Ellie doing that. She's too self-centered for that kind of stuff. But when you look at Amy, especially in this episode where she finds him injured after the car crash and nurtures him back to health, Well, you just know, you know, she would make a great wife for Richard Kimball if he has to go out and in the middle of the night and go over to the hospital to attend to some sick child or something as a pediatrician. When he gets back, you know, if he's with Helen, she's going to have a drink in her hand. And when he gets back to Amy, she's going to be there with a cup of coffee for him. I mean, it's obvious that she's that type of woman. And so I think what we really want to do is see a little stability in Kimball's life. And she would be the one to provide that. So it's very important. Whenever they have a love interest in the fugitive, it's always important to set it up right from the beginning. And just like we like Karen right away when we see her, we like Amy right away when we see her. It just doesn't take any time at all to really kind of latch onto her because she just looks so different. How refreshing it is to not see some delusional woman come along and just absolutely, some of them actually beg Kimball to go along with them. It's just so insane because this man's got a lot of problems and he's the last person in the world that you want to do that with. So I think that this is a very important moment in the evolution of the series, much less in this story. And I agree with Ken in his review where he says, well, you know, what a missed opportunity. Would have been nice to have a little interlude there, see them out on a date, talking in a restaurant, seeing a show. It would have been great. But unfortunately, as always happens to poor Richard Kimball, fate intervenes, and he ends up getting in a car accident while he's driving the truck. He's picked up a hitchhiker who says that he has no family. He says, Uncle Sam is my family. So he's just back from being in the armed forces. Talks about his dog tags, which is critical to this story. And all of a sudden, there's an accident, and Kimball jumps out of the truck in time to save his life. But the passenger absolutely freezes and dies in the crash. When the truck rolls down the hill, we see Kimball badly injured, just simply laying on the ground. And well, it's hard to tell whether he's alive or not. And back in the office, there's another good moment by Barbara Barry in which Amy is told by her boss, who's already jealous that she's looking at Richard Kimball, sorry to tell you this, but he's been in an accident and he's dead. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't start crying. She just kind of swallows really hard. If you take a real good look, she just kind of gulps. This is absolutely astonishing news for her because she's obviously very much attracted to him. She's really, this is part of her performance. I think that Barbara Barry's performance here is one of the best of any actress in the entire series. So now there's a car crash and right away, there's a chance here, again, like there was in Never Wave Goodbye, to try to make Gerard think that it's Kimball who died in the crash, because nobody really knows that he had a passenger. Ken, I think you mentioned in your review that it appears that Kimball's never going to learn that it's not that easy to fool Gerard, is it?
No, I thought that this angle of the story where he tries to fake his death and then fool Gerard, I thought that was kind of loony on Kimball's part. And so that part of the story wasn't that interesting to me.
Well, it may not be as loony, however, as Never Wave Goodbye, where he devises a plan where they're going to go out and they're going to practically invite a shark attack and get in the water in this leaky little raft. I thought that was really insane.
All right, let's take, as long as we're talking about insanity, let me come on here, and it's certainly an expertise. Let's take a quick time out. We'll come back. Are we going to be into Act 2? Did I pick the right time
here? Much, yeah.
All right, good. We'll come back with Act 2 of The End Is But the Beginning, Talking Fugitive, here on Retro Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. Replay the sounds of today yesterday, so stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAV, we'll be with you to warm the day in every way. be. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
KSAV sounds like a good station. I'm going to check that out sometime. Okay, on KSAV for this evening, a pre-recorded broadcast, so you're going to have to hold your comments in for the moment. Let's go on to Act 2, and once again, Bob, you take over.
Okay, 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be back with Part 2, Acts 3 and 4 of The End Is But the Beginning, More Amy, and a plan to try to make Gerard think that Kimball has died. A suspenseful scene involving a cat and an accidental shooting. Very exciting finish to this story. We'll do that 2 weeks from tonight. Back to this story right now. So there's been this terrible accident. Somehow Kimball survives and manages, amazingly, to find his way, though he's grievously injured, back to his hotel room. He goes in there and he begins... I'm a little confused here. He starts writing a letter to his father because apparently he's already formulated an idea to make Gerard think that he died in the crash. So that if Gerard goes to his hotel room as expected and finds this letter, he'll believe that it was indeed Richard Kimball who died. So he goes back to his hotel room. Amy is sent there to get his belongings, and she finds him there. And that's where she finds out a little bit after that this is really Richard Kimball. But before we get there, I'd like to mention there's a scene in which Gerard is informed by Captain Carpenter in his office that Richard Kimball has died in a car accident. And this is a great performance by Barry Morse, who he says just about nothing, but you can watch his face. He gets up from the desk. And he goes over and he gets the drink of water out of the water cooler, and he swallows that really hard, just like Amy did, as he contemplates the fact that it just might be over. What do you think about that, Kitty? I mean, Gerard looks actually upset that it might be at an end.
Yeah, you know, it's like, is he upset that he's dead, or is he upset that he doesn't get the privilege of bringing him back to Stafford? You know, it's like it's almost like his life has lost meaning here.
Because
he doesn't get to chase Kimball and bring him in. It's like it's a job unfinished.
Right. So, if the whole purpose of this is to bring him to justice, well, what's the difference? What kind of justice? If he brings him back to death row, fine. If he gets killed some other way, well, who cares?
Yeah, I was going to say, considering the fact that he was sentenced to death anyway, what difference does it make how he dies?
Well, he looks quite upset here, and it's interesting that Captain Carpenter calls him on this at first. He tells him, you know, you've got other work to do. If it's over, it's over. That's it. But he, as usual, relents. And before you know it, Gerard is on a plane. And he's headed there to make sure that even though, as Ken has told Kimball time and again, nothing short of seeing Kimball on an autopsy table is going to convince him. So he's off to find out if this really is Kimball who died in this supposed car crash. Back at Kimball's hotel, he meets Amy, and we have another very interesting moment that's quite different than we've seen in the past, and that is Amy finds out who this really is, and of course, like most people, she believes instantaneously that he really didn't commit the crime. Kimball has that way about him of just convincing everybody right away, and he's laying there, and he's got this towel over his head, and she's nursing him back to health, and he talks about how tired he is, how he's had it, he can't run anymore, he can't do it anymore, and he shows some remorse about what happened the night of the murder. We didn't even see this in the flashbacks in The Girl from Little Egypt. He talks about, I believe he says something like, I did leave her alone that evening. I did leave her alone when the one-armed man came in and killed her. So he's harboring a little guilt. We don't usually see that.
Yeah, in fact, I think this is the one episode, because we're now up to, what, episode 84 or something like that?
Oh, at the group, yeah, yeah.
In our reviews, and this is the only episode that I have actually seen him look upset
right.
that his wife is dead.
Yeah.
This is the only time I have seen him show any kind of grief or remorse that his wife is no longer with him. And I just thought, you know, what took them so long? One of the biggest complaints I have with this series is that Richard Kimball has just never seemed all that upset that his wife is dead. He just seems to be angry that he got blamed for it. And another thing I might add, too, is that we haven't really talked much about Amy's boss. It's very apparent that Amy's boss has a thing for Amy.
Yeah.
But Amy, of course, is completely disinterested in him. And I thought it was good. You know, it was kind of an interesting scene where he's trying to tell Amy that he really has feelings for her, and she just, you know, it's like she's just tuning him out. You know, I thought that was a very good scene.
Yeah, well, I think just, that, Ken, in your
anything.
Review, did you not mention you thought he was too old for her?
Yes, I did not like that character. I don't know about you guys. He looked like he was in his 50s. And I guess Amy's in her 30s, roughly, and Kimball's in his 30s, too.
Right.
So this John Harlan character, I didn't like him at all through the whole episode.
A little surprise from you about this Kimball guilt here in this scene?
You mean the motel room there?
Yeah, where he says, he's talking about how, he says, I did leave her alone that night.
That motel room scene, you know, Amy comes in because she's going to collect the belongings
of right.
Steve Younger,
right.
and she doesn't know. And then she's surprised to see him, and then he collapsed on the floor.
Right.
And then the next scene is she, second. Okay. Then the next scene, she is kind of hovering over him, helping him write his letter.
Right.
I thought that was a very well-written scene, very touching.
I agree.
And, again, I was impressed with Amy. She could have skipped out of there. She had a lot of options. But she chose to stay and help and get to know, you know, Steve Younger even more. And then she learns the truth about him.
Right.
And she really genuinely cares for Richard Kimball. And I forgot to tell you guys that Amy, she's up in my picture frame in the office.
Oh, of course.
So I can't leave that out. She definitely belongs in the picture frame.
Well, I agree with Kitty. I think this is a very unusual moment for him to actually look sad there that Helen has died. The series has taken up so much with him running around and trying to save his own life that it often looks like there's really no time to show any real emotion or anything about the fact that his wife is dead. And I agree with that. Sometimes it seems like, well, yeah, she's dead, but she was pretty difficult to live with. What I'm really angry about is that they're blaming me for it. Other than that, I don't particularly care. Now, he says he left her alone that night, but I got news for Richard Kimball. He is guilty of this, and I've mentioned this in the past, I think back when we did The Girl from Little Egypt, which is that he not only left her alone that night, which I could understand because they were having a big fight, but he left the door unlocked. If you watch that scene, that flashback scene, he doesn't lock the front door. He simply runs through the door, and he runs out to the car. So he left the door unlocked.
Actually, didn't he leave the door wide open?
No, I think he closes it behind him. But,
oh, okay.
But if you close it, I mean, even if you assume that the regular lock on the doorknob would lock automatically, that's not a deadbolt lock. So anybody can get past that. That's nothing. And so he just didn't turn around and lock the door with his key. So in some ways, I'll be honest with you, he's a little bit guilty over this whole thing. So it's just interesting to see him actually look that like he's sad for a change about the fact that his wife is dead. Now, we have one of these weird instances. I know this means a lot to you, Kitty, because you're always talking about lack of continuity in this series, in which Amy, as Ken pointed out, helps him compose this letter to his father, and then she takes it to the police station, and not Gerard, but the guy in charge over there, reads it out loud, the end of it, in which Kimball signs the letter, signs off to his father, and he goes, "A love to Doug and Sis." Well, you know what? I don't know who Doug is. Maybe I missed it. I thought he had a brother named Ray. Now he's got a brother named Doug, and I don't remember him ever really calling Donna Sis. He usually just calls her Donna. The fugitives spent a lot of money on things to make things look good. You know, they did night shooting and some location shooting. They spent a lot of money for a TV series, more than most series did. But apparently they didn't think they had to have any money to have anybody do script continuity. Would have been nice if somebody had been sitting there who could have said, wait a minute, what do you mean love the dog? That's not his name. His name is Ray. Now, I know that that's nitpicking, but you know what? There's so many instances of this, they begin to pile up after a while, don't they, Kitty?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, we can cite other examples. I mean, initially, Mrs. Gerard's name was Anne, and then
yeah.
she transformed into Marie. They can't make up their minds whether or not Helen was hit over the head or strangled. You know, it's just, I mean, quite frankly, I'm surprised that her name is still Helen. You know.
Yes, it's very strange, and it takes so little, actually, to just, you know, the Fugitive is a worldwide hit. Millions of people are watching the series. The question is, are the people who make the series watching the series? I'm not really sure that they are, or I'm sure that the writers aren't, because they took writers from here and writers from there, and they accepted scripts from all over the place, and they just tried to make them fit together. But you know what? If the writers haven't done their homework and haven't seen the series previously, they're going to start using the wrong name, the wrong locales, and all kinds of things, and I don't know. I think people do pay attention to things like that. It doesn't really hurt the series. It's a minor thing, but it's really irritating. At least have some kind of continuity, which they don't have.
You know,
so,
Bob, there's one thing that I would have liked to have seen right
that?
In the motel room there
right.
with Amy and Kimball right there. If you remember Marie Gerard and Kimball talking about Helen, and it was an extended conversation.
Right.
Well, in the motel room, you know, Kimball is there, he's down, he's despondent.
Right.
They, you know, Amy and Kimball right there could have had a 5 to 10 minute conversation, like Amy's asking, what was Helen like? And then Kimball would have talked about her a little bit. That would have added to the drama.
Oh, you want to tell that to Kitty? That drives her crazy.
Instead, it was very short-lived, you know, it was just a one
Why
or
not?
Two sentence. And then they go on, you know, to the next scene in the police station. Maybe cut out some of these unnecessary scenes and episodes and get to the meat of what the series is really about.
They simply don't want to talk about Helen. Nobody wanted to write it or nobody wanted to talk about it.
Okay, 1 minute.
And so they simply don't do it throughout the series. It's really lacking. It's really a pity. And I'd like to point out to people that if you want to find out about Helen, you should go to the Fugitive Views and Reviews group and go to the file section, where you can see a story, a fan fiction story written by Kitty that was posted on our message board during Christmas, in which Kitty tells us about Helen and that relationship and what led up to it. Right, Kitty?
Yes, I did.
So
and I also explained what happened to Brother Ray, too.
That's right. And if you can't get it from the writers, then you get it from us. Because that's one thing missing in this series, for all the importance attached to the death of Helen Kimball. I still haven't the slightest idea who she is and whether she's ever standing there without a drink in her hand. And that's really,
yeah.
really a pity. They just didn't want to do it, so they simply didn't, something they often did in this series. When they didn't want to face something, they just kind of pushed it aside and said, well, don't even ask about it. But you're right. That would have made for a nice scene here. He had a real chance while he was laying there to tell us a lot about, just like he had a chance to tell Gerard's wife in Landscape, the same thing. He's had a lot of opportunities, and he doesn't take them. It's as simple as that.
All right, well, we are going to have a chance to continue the discussion of this program in 2 weeks from tonight, on the 26th. You'll come back to do part two of The End Is But the Beginning, and I will see all of you then. To the rest of you, I want to remind you, no Perfectly Frank tonight, no Talking Television with Dave White tonight. Instead, at 7 o'clock Pacific Coast time, we're going sports. Game 3 of the 1947 World Series. And it's fun to listen to, and I'll bet none of you remember who won it. That'll be on tonight. For the rest of you, see you all in 2 weeks when we return to talk Fugitive here on Cherivision Radio.